Hey, everybody. Before we get into this week's podcast, we just wanted to take a second outside of the B&B and make brief mention of what's happening in the world outside right now. I just wanted to make it clear that both Liana and I stand in complete solidarity with the grief and pain and anger that has come from the Black Lives Matter movement in response to the unjustified killings of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and many more at the hands of police officers across the country.
And we know that there are a lot of important conversations that are happening right now. This podcast, it ain't it. But if taking some time away from the news for a couple hours of silliness can help you, we're happy to be that for you. At the same time, we want to use this platform as a way to amplify Black voices, people of color who are speaking their truth about what is happening in this country every day.
So if you haven't checked it out yet, on our reality TV Rehap Ups feed, Bryce Isaiah actually just recently spoke about the recent police killings on this week's episode of the Purple Pants podcast, which Rob subsequently reposted on the main feed. I highly recommend each and every person listening right now to please check out his extremely vital message. If you are looking for ways to dedicate yourself to the cause, you can go to joincampaignzero.com. Which outlines 10 policy proposals to help curb racial policing practices. And for every donation you make to Campaign Zero, Rob Cesternino will match your donation dollar for dollar. Just send a screenshot of your donation to rob@robhasawebsite.com. We'll also include in the show notes a list of other causes you can donate to around the Black Lives Matter movement, as well as several articles that aggregate podcasts created by Black hosts.
So to all our listeners of color, the B&B and RHAP at large is here for you, whether it's an ear to listen, a hand to hold, or a doofy podcast about random episodes of Survivor, which serves as what Mike would call auditory junk food. We want to stand alongside you as we fight this injustice. There is no ambiguity. Black Lives Matter.
Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the RHAP B&B. Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. Better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the RHAP B&B.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the RHAP B&B for episode 2 of Survivor, the Australian Outback. Or should I say, good day, mate. That and many more Australian phrasings will take place over the course of our podcast as we do a deep dive into the classic episode of Survivor, the Australian Outback, all the way back from 2001, only a week after the Super Bowl. I cannot wait to get into this with somebody who I would always share my beef jerky and my mangrove worms and my small bars of chocolate with, Liana Boris. Liana, how are you?
I'm good. This was the food episode of Survivor, apparently. It was like discussions about rice, talk about fish, talk about rice, talk about fish, beef jerky, gross food eating. Very thematic, and I enjoyed that very much.
Welcome to old school Survivor, where survival actually mattered.
That's what I was reminded of, because we do the Casuals Corner segment frequently, and I always see comments about, why can't we make it more like the old days where they had to actually survive? And I was like, oh, that's why people think that they're getting more food now, because we don't have whole episodes focused on how they're starving.
Yeah, well, to be fair, this was also the season where they literally ran out of food and were so drained that Jeff Probst had to, like, basically mercy give them like a welfare check on rice in exchange for Colby's flag.
Yeah, that's true. The first trade, Angela could never. So that's a good point. I didn't think about that. I mean, I don't think, was it just that they ran out of food? Because the conditions weren't as harsh as some of the other places. Right?
Well, it was a little bit. It was that, yeah. So they had ran out of food, and they'd also located their new merge shelter in a riverbed, and there was flood that happened that took away, I think, some good portions of their food.
Yes, no, that's right, because it like washed everything out. No, I remember that. Okay.
We should also mention here, by the way, we're not having a guest on this week. It's just me, Liana. People have been waiting desperately for like a third voice to drop in. It's just going to be the melodious tones of Liana and myself, we're keeping it in the family, as RuPaul would say, just the B&B this week.
Yes, just the B, just the B and the B from the B&B this week.
The eponymous B&B. So we were talking about this offline because Josh Wigler, who is a part of sort of like this look back series with Rob, has called his version, I think, a wiggle in time. And I was trying to figure out, is there like a cute little timey-wimey nickname we could give the B&B? The closest thing I came up with was the Flash B&B back, but I do not know how that rolls off the tongue.
Now that you say it out loud, yeah. That is horrible. So Mike texted me the Flash B&B back. Is that what you said? Flash B and back?
Flash B and back. Or should we do Flash B and B back?
Flash back and B.
Flash B and back.
No. It looks way better when you write it out because it looks like, oh, that's cool. It looks flashback, but it's got B and B in there. But because you say B and B, like it's not just ampersand. You can't just make a small little noise. Yeah, that's really terrible.
Ooh, should we do an onomatopoeia for an ampersand?
Okay.
Flash B and back.
Flash being and back.
Yeah, flash being and back.
Flash being and back. Flashback. This is a flashback, a rewind. What if it's the RHAP B&B RB? RHAP B&B rewind back. Wait, RHAP B&B rewind. That's kind of cool.
Okay, RHAP B&B rewind. I like that. But you have to do it like with an inflection on your voice, like RHAP B&B rewind.
Rewind.
And then you put on like the sound effect of the tape rewinding.
Yes. Okay, perfect. Great. Now we just made a whole thing. We'll have to figure out how to edit it, edit that in, the tape rewind sound effect. But then that's cool because if the B&B, we ever do like a remix version, then we can naturally do the RHAP B&B remix.
I don't want to imagine what the remix is going to be of this podcast.
Like a normal podcast.
Exactly. It's going to be the most like palatable parts smushed together. It's probably going to be about 10 minutes of content across however many, like the near 60 episodes we've done at this point. More than 60.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
What should we do for episode 100?
All the nonsense we've created. Yeah, how many episodes do you think we've done? Let's see. We've done
five seasons of 14 episodes of Peach. A peach.
A peach.
It is the food episode.
Yeah. Wait, we've done five? I think we did six seasons.
Oh yeah, we've done six seasons. You're right.
Okay,
and then you throw in like, I don't know, a combined like eight episodes across the two Big Brother seasons that we've done.
Oh, we might be at 100.
What? Is this our 100th podcast?
Oh my God, Mike, we're doing our 100th podcast. Who would have thought? Well, because that's if there's 14, then that's 80 just from the Survivor alone.
Oh my God.
Okay, so we're at 88, and then we did one last week, so that's 89 approximately. Mike, we're going to hit the 100th episode during our B&B rewind. Records. I don't know.
This is what happens when it's just the two of us. Like, at least there's a third voice to sort of buoy us. Right now it's just the two of us mumbling aimlessly. But here's the thing, obviously it has been a very heavy week in a number of ways, but I think something that this rewind has at least helped with is this ability to, if you have the ability to do so, like mentally take yourself out through this window into the past, into an episode of Survivor. And as much as we might talk about how this episode differs greatly from the extremely fast pace that we're used to seeing, I mean, two for two, personally, I think, Liana, I know that we were both in love with watching the Borneo premiere last week, but I have a suspicion that you enjoyed Suspicion as well.
Yeah. Wait, was that the episode title?
Yes, it was.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes more sense.
This is before, like, I think it's season 13 is when they start, like, taking quotes from people because they just started running out of generic terms to use for situations.
Right. Well, I would just imagine that the random word generator, it was starting to get a little thin in terms of that. But I did. I enjoyed this episode. I can't believe I'm about to say this, but I think I wanted more Jeff Probst.
Wow.
I know. It's like, where's Jeff? I kind of miss him.
Well, here's the thing. You knew, like, new school Jeff Probst would be all over Roger jumping off that rock, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. I can imagine the comments now.
Roger, think about your lawyers at home. What would they want to see you jump off this rock into the water?
Or if he doesn't like him, it's just a lot of shade.
Yeah, exactly.
Roger refusing to jump when everyone else has already jumped.
Exactly. It's interesting. Yeah, it was very focused on the castaways. Much like the first episode, we got barely any stuff between the immunity challenge and tribal council. I guess it's because it was a pretty foregone conclusion, right? It was a unanimous vote. So it was Ogakor's vote was much less sloppy than the Tagi vote that we saw last week. But I mean, I will always go on record to say that I still think the pre-merge of Survivor the Australian Outback is one of the best pre-merges in Survivor history. And I think this episode just like brought me right back to it, where, you know, we talked last week about how the Borneo cast was iconic in each and every way. And I think the Australia cast still had a lot of incredible stuff in it. Is it not, you know, is it really the Halcyon game changers that we're used to across the board, 16 for 16? I don't think so, but there's still a lot of magnetic personalities even showing 6 days in here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I would say probably overall, just because of my memory of everything, it's like, you know, it's the second version. It's the remix, right?
So it's with an Australian accent.
What does that sound like?
Reka, mate.
Yeah, where's Shannon when you need her?
Yeah, exactly. I think Shannon's never coming back to the podcast. I've did my spotless impression of an Australian record being scratched. Is that an attraction? The world's largest record scratch in Canberra?
Yeah, that'll be on the list. If not, we'll fund it. We'll make one. Yes. Well, I was going to say something, and it was a thing. Okay, two things. One, when I was watching what I will call strategy, I was like, Shannon's going to hate this. If Shannon thought that there was no strategy in Borneo, Shannon's going to think there was zero strategy in this. But that being said, I didn't mind, because it's kind of a nice reprieve from all of the strategy. And because, like you said, there's such a good cast, you get so many snide comments.
Oh my god.
And yeah, I mean, it just makes me happy.
Well, it's tough going back to this season, but I'm like, you know what, it's episode two, it's gonna be fine. And I completely forget that on Kucha, this episode was literally, the whole Kucha storyline was Michael Scoopin doing Michael Scoopin things and Jeff Varner being the main source of frustration from a confessional perspective. So it's like, I can't escape it on Kucha this week.
Yeah, I will say that was a little like, oh man, of course, these are the two people that we get to focus on first, because it was effectively right off the bat, like Jeff talking about Mike messing up the rice or like starting the rice and then leaving or whatever. So that was a little bit of a like, oh man, moment. But the quote, I'm a student of nutrition, still hilarious.
Yeah, I absolutely love it in so many ways. But I talked about this last week, how, you know, I was definitely Team Pagong as a kid, but now as an adult, I'm more interested in Tagi. It pretty much gets transplanted here into Australia. You know, at the time, I was a big fan of Kucha because I thought that was probably the closest thing to Pagong. You know, it seemed like they were the more like high-spirited tribe. Looking back, that is so weird to say. But going into this, the Ogakor tribe, not only has it sought more success in general, considering that half of this tribe is going to be, you know, some of the biggest names in Survivor history, but I would also say that they have the much more interesting dynamics, even just shown in this episode, where, while I do agree that there wasn't much strategy, there was so much social stuff embroiled, boiling like a nice tortilla in like the food stuff. You know, Jerry basically subverting Keith's role as cook, the whole beef jerky stuff and Marilyn's response to it. Like, there's a lot of interpersonal dynamics going on in Ogakor that makes them a very complex tribe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's super interesting. And I think because you have people, I mean, Jerry especially, who is just iconic casting, standing out in such a way and being willing to kind of do these types of things. And then, of course, you have the whole Jerkygate debacle, which is all just super fascinating. But I think that's what happens when you just cast entertaining people. And I'm, you know, you're looking at the list, or, you know, I don't know, noteworthy for many reasons, because you've got like Kimmy, I would say Jerry. Who else? Elizabeth, Colby, Tina. Like, there's so many people from this cast that are just have such a place in Survivor lore. You know, even though we really do talk about season one because it's, you know, the first one, there's so many people that really played a big role.
Yeah, I mean, it's not to say that because of the success of season one, this was and will always be, like, I think, cumulatively the most watched season in Survivor history. where because it was building off that, even had like its second season had a Super Bowl premiere for a reality show in 2001. That is ridiculous. And, you know, the fact that they were able to build returning success out of it as well. It's like it's an underrated cast, maybe I would say, in the annals of Survivor history. Obviously, the Borneo cast gets a lot of love, but I think Australia is up there as well, whether due to, you know, famousness or infamy. Speaking of Jerry, what are your thoughts on Jerry? Because it does seem like, I think, especially in lieu of maybe more modern day villains or things that people have said and done over the years on and off the show, it does feel like there's been a bit of like a resurgence of popularity with Jerry Manthe, as opposed to obviously her first season. She was known as affectionately the bitch from Survivor.
Well, I think the thing is that because I've watched so much reality TV, she ain't boring, yeah. You know, and so that's the type of person that I want to see on television. So I'm sure if I had watched live and had been part of the Survivor, you know, community at the time, you know, would I have been the biggest Jerry fan? I don't know, but I would have enjoyed that she was on the TV because at least she's making drama. I think I appreciate her because she's a strong woman, and I like seeing that on TV, and I like seeing her being willing to just make the tortillas,
yeah.
When Keith, the gourmet chef, was just making the mush rice. I really like Jerry, and I always appreciate her seasons. I like watching her.
I love Jerry. I think Jerry, no matter what, is going to bring you entertainment, which makes sense because I believe her career in this season is aspiring actress. And so I think even though maybe her consciousness of the camera leads to a bit more artificiality, I think it does lead her to become a bigger personality, which definitely sticks out while all these people are like slowly shrinking into themselves. Jerry never did. And whether it was that, her unrequited crush on Colby, which is going to start coming up next episode, her friendship with Amber. It's like you said, like she is someone who will pursue something that she wants. And I really admire that about her. I loved that scene where she starts making the tortilla, because not only does it show up Keith, but it also shows like Jerry's go-gettiveness, that she is somebody who's like, you know what, if I have a problem with this, I'm just going to take care of it myself then. If I don't like Keith's cooking, I'm going to do it on my own. And she was super ingenious in that and ends up creating like this big hit of the Ogacore camp over the gourmet chef. What do you say in tribal council? Like, we have not sourced enough protein around here for any creative ideas.
Yeah, Jeff was like, you guys have fire and a gourmet chef. Why are you not eating well? By the way, rude, Jeff. I loved it. It's like, what's the deal, guys?
Yeah, why are you so skinny?
Yeah, and then Keith said, until we start sourcing great ingredients.
Keith, it's not a farmer's market. You're in the bush.
I also like that he used the word sourcing.
Yeah.
Like you're sourcing it, like gathering ingredients. Maybe it's an industry term.
It is. I've from watching and covering Top Chef for so many years, it very much is like an industry term, like sourcing great ingredients, like going to a market and being like, how fresh is this arugula? Let me make sure I can use it with my leafy greens.
Well, they've managed to source rice and flour somehow, which I was trying to remember. Did they get flour in just one of their packages?
Yeah, because like remember that after they jumped over, after they got abandoned from that giant cargo plane where they all puked their guts out. Maybe that's another reason why they're so hungry, is because they were abandoned on empty stomachs, Jeff. They were given like these big crates to take with their camps. And I believe, I think flour is there. I think they had corn as well, because I do believe at some point they're going to cook corn kernels down the line in the season. So I think there were some like rudimentary, like, hey, I'm clearing out my pantry as I move and I can't believe this stuff is still here type of supplies.
Yeah, Keith, they're pantry staples, okay?
So, yeah, we don't know how well sourced they are.
Yeah, your truffles will have to wait, bro.
Maybe he's like, I'm going to go look for truffles and perhaps some thyme. Some five spice in around, perhaps I'll ask a kangaroo for some so you guys can cook that tortilla.
Yeah, man, if only the pig that they caught, like you could have used that for truffle sniffing instead.
I mean, Australia is known for its wide supply of truffles. Could you imagine Jeff being like, all right, guy in the hat, how you hold it up a camp? Jeff, we found a fantastic supply of white truffle and we've been feasting on it all night.
I don't think it has many calories, though. So I think if you're, you know, you really want to get some food, I don't know if that's necessarily the best, but it is a great ingredient. So Keith would be happy about that.
I learned from this week of Top Chef that a pound of like white truffle can net you like almost $3,000. So like, you know, we had Colby pocketing coral later on in this season and getting coffee for it. I think you could just like, honestly, throw some truffles into your shorts and like say, ask to get voted out and then just fly back to the States with, you know, more money in your pocket than maybe someone who comes in second place.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. So sneak the truffles on the plane. Don't declare them when you cross customs because I don't think they're going to let you take your truffles. And then, yeah, sell them on the black market. I don't know. I think would you still make more? Or how do truffles last a long time? Because maybe you could still like hang out for a while, see how well you do. And then that's your backup plan to make money.
Or you could do something where you like threaten to burn the truffles if they vote you out.
Ooh, yeah, because you were going to, maybe there's a rule against splitting the truffle money, though.
Yeah, that's the way around it. Like, well, they said we can't split the money, but they didn't say we couldn't split the truffle earnings.
Truffle earnings.
Oh, the Truffle Alliance. It's going to happen.
Yes, manifest this.
Well, so, Liana, you talked about calories. I'm so happy you did, because that segues perfectly into our first game here on the BNB. Because this week, much like the second episode of Borneo, brought in the gross food challenge, a staple of old school Survivor, as opposed to a pantry staple. Keith, I would say that there are some interestingly sourced ingredients, I would say, that were the survivors had to eat, or in Kimmy's case, maybe not eat so much in some exceptions. But, you know, this differed a bit from the Butod larva that they had to eat in Borneo, and that they had a whole wide variety, a literal wheel, Renap style, of ingredients to eat. But you know what? I feel like we hear sometimes on Survivor, like, hey, it doesn't matter if I eat this disgusting thing because this is calories. I'm thinking of like Survivor Gabon when Kenny and Michelle are eating termites, you know, on day one, like it's protein. So I thought, okay, let's think about how much nutritional value they're actually getting out of this stuff. So Liana, basically, I'm going to give you two foods that were on the wheel in the gross food eating challenge and ask you which one had more blank, as in like a facet of nutrition. And you have to figure out which one was the more nutritious in that value.
All right, let's count some macros, bro. I got this.
Exactly. Like for people who are calorie counting on Survivor, you're going to want to write this down. Do you think that people, much like Kimmy, opted out due to her vegetarian? So I guess it's sort of pescatarianism, because I believe she said that she wouldn't eat any land dwelling mammals.
Any mammals. Did she say anything about...
Oh, no, she said birds. Yeah, she said she won't eat fowl either.
Okay. So, but she will eat fish. Well, she eats worms. I was going to say, are worms fish? That is not true.
I think worms are fish. Do they?
We're defining worms as fish.
We call them dirt fish.
Yeah, well, one thing I will say before we get into the game is, first of all, super sad that Jeff Probst did not make a personal hand delivery of either the reward or immunity challenge tree mail. So that was very disappointing.
He's grown up only from that first season.
He got promoted from Fijian mailman. That's so sad. Also, the note, was that impact font? Like, I couldn't even read the note.
And it
looked
like it
note.
Was printed on, like the smallest, it's printed on like a post-it note.
I know. It's like, for goodness sakes, at least one of the really good positive changes Survivor made was making them readable. So
yeah, that was such like that was a real eye test. I feel like people who like are not very good at eyesight would have a really tough time reading that parchment, because it was like such a closely printed together font, because they had to scribble everything onto it.
Like they couldn't get it. Maybe they should source larger pieces of paper and that would help. Also, there was a ton of didgeridoo music during this immunity challenge. Well, and that was all I could hear.
It was a fun, you know, especially the theme, the opening intro was so much fun, right? Because it had like the crocodile stuff, especially when his mouth closed and the guy went yum. Like that felt like very Americano infused take on Australia.
Right. This is what we know about Australia. These few things. I hope that you enjoy.
Well, we learned a lot about Bush Tucker, which is sort of like another. Is that a euphemism for like what a drag queen does in their career?
I think so. Yeah,
it's a good way to define them. So this is some of the Bush Tucker stuff that Jeff helped guide people through, even though he did not guide the tree mail that was written on a thumbtack. All right, so Liana, which has more fat, cow brain or mud whelk?
Okay, I think brain is super fatty, so I'm going to go with brain.
That is correct. Cow brain is super fatty, 9 grams of fat. Mud whelk only has 0.34 grams of fat, that lean little mud whelk.
Wait, per what?
The there.
per ounce? Per pound?
Per serving.
Per serving. Okay, got it.
You know, like those nutrition facts on the side of things that are like, these are the calories for one serving, and but like one serving is like 2 goldfish.
Yeah, no, that reminds me of, there's a meme where there's a kid and it's like, how much orange juice do you want? And he's like, 7. And then it's like, 7 what? And he's like, red or something. it doesn't make any sense.
That's going to be my son, guaranteed.
Yeah, I think so too. Like father, like son.
My son has taken to, like, I've started to realize that my son has gotten to an age where I can't do things with him because he'll want me to do them again and again if he really enjoys them. Like, he has started to point. And so, instinctively, one day he stuck his finger out, and I stuck my finger out, and I touched it, and I went, ouch, like E.T. And he loves it, and we do it at least 15 times every day now.
Oh, no, that's terrible. I hope you're going to get really good at your E.T. impression.
Well, there's another one that's a little less on the sanitary side that also involves fingers. Where he sticks his finger in my mouth and I go,
ew.
And he loves it. And so he does it to me 20 times a day, even more so than E.T.
Oh, no. All right. So the key is stop doing stuff with your child.
Yeah, or at least something involving like fingers.
Yeah, like if you have to think before everything you do with Asher, just think, am I okay doing this 50 times a day?
Because exactly.
That's the world that we're in. I remember one time I babysat one of my college professor's kids. We played this game called Icebreakers a million times.
Is that the one where like there's like plastic blocks of ice and you have to like tap through them?
Yes, and it's sort of a, I can't remember if it's like Jenga or it's just random, but you like knock them out and then eventually it all falls. So you don't want to be the one to knock it all down.
Well, I like this idea called random Jenga.
Yeah, so I don't know if the other ones have structural integrity to hold the whole thing up or if it's just a like random
chaotic
choice.
Jenga feels like a way to describe 2020.
Yeah, but with less rules somehow.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on here. Liana, which has more protein, an apple or a worm that goes inside of the apple?
Okay, it's got to be the worm.
Yes, the worm has twice as much. A worm has 1 gram of protein. An apple slice only has 0.5 gram of protein.
So one worm versus one apple slice.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you could have 2 apples and you'd have as much protein as from 1 worm. If you want to skip your worm today, just have 2 apples.
There's I think it's a joke from Little Britain, but it's my diet plan is I just take what I'm going to eat and then I cut it in half. So then that way I'm eating half. So then I can eat twice as much.
All right, Liana, which has more fat? A fun size Snickers bar, which is sort of like what I labeled the nondescript candy bar as, like, I don't remember if Snickers was the sponsor at this point. I know it came in during Marquesas, but I assumed it was a fun size Snickers bar or a Cricket.
Okay, first of all, that is so wrong. That is definitely a full size Snickers bar, just cut in half. Okay, so get your candy right, Mike. That being said, like, I don't know. Wait, a Cricket? Okay, no, Snickers bar, Snickers.
I'm sorry. One size Snickers bar has 3.5 grams of fat. A Cricket has 5.6 grams of fat.
Damn!
Yes.
Cricket!
Put
how
in the
eat
thick
less.
In Cricket.
It's thick it.
Ooh, you thick it.
Ew! I don't know what that is, but ew!
Oh, I want a drawing now of a thick it.
It's
just imagine a Cricket with like giant hind legs.
Yeah, and it's It's thick. Damn, boy.
Ooh, damn, thick it.
Damn. He thick it. That's a thick it boy.
Oh, boy. Is there a platform dedicated to insect videos that we can put thick it on? Is it Crick Croc?
Crick Croc. Our insect memes would kill.
Yeah, as much like a praying mantis, it would kill. Before we move on to more fun and games, we're going to take a quick break to listen to a word from our sponsors.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And we are back, so let's keep on keeping on. All right, Liana, which has more calories, tripe or a worm?
Tripe or a worm? Okay, again, the units are like messing me up here. I'm going to go with tripe.
That is correct. Tripe has 131 calories. A worm has 125, so it's close, but the tripe wins out.
Well, you know, if you are counting calories, you got to weigh the worm first, because, you know, you can't just say it's just a worm. If it's a big worm versus a tiny worm, it might be different, though. But that's probably an average worm is 125 calories. That's not bad, actually, for like an earthworm.
Yeah, that's sort of by the, because I couldn't find specifically for mangrove worms.
Right. That wasn't in MyFitnessPal. It wasn't. Yeah. You don't have to log it. Okay,
yeah,
got it.
I logged it, and then the app sort of like logged me out and said, like, I think you need to do some thinking, because I think you're sort of going down the wrong path here with your nutrition.
You have bigger problems.
Have you ever had, because I feel like tripe out of all of this is probably like the biggest crossover thing outside of the apple and the Snickers bar, obviously, into I guess modern cuisine.
I've had it in pho before. Mm-hmm. As part of, like, you know, you can get the assorted bowls where it's every single type of meat. So I've had it there, but never just on its own.
Mm, yeah, I think I've had a similar type of thing. I mean, I would imagine that, like, it seems like it's fine. I guess, I don't know. I've had haggis, and I guess haggis is not, it's in the family, but it's not like exactly like that.
But they're related. They're like second cousins.
They're next to each other in the digestive system.
The brain. Yeah, we're doing it by biological region, like depending on where it's located, their family. The brain is also relatively normal, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, less seen in Western cuisine, but, you know, it's around. And it's fat. Like, fat is delicious.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, which has more saturated fat? An apple or a whelk?
It has to be a whelk. Do apples have saturated fat?
Apples have 0.1 grams of saturated fat. Whelks have 0.03 grams of saturated
oh,
fat.
Oh, snap!
Apple has more saturated fat than a whelk. Like, again, whelks are super lean, apparently.
Okay, well, the thicket has to get on the whelk's workout plan.
Yeah, we got what we have, like, the buff whelk and the thicket.
Buff whelk. That's the adventures of buff whelk and the thicket.
I smell a comic.
Oh my god. Can we, okay, for our Renap idea, because now that we won the Survivor draft, by the way,
thank you so much for that, because I was drawing dead. I believe I came in dead last place out of the four of us, and you crushed it because you got Tony on your team by default.
Yeah. Yes, so thank the three of you for not picking Tony so that he ended up on my team. I think I was looking at the scores, and it didn't matter. Even if, like, let's say Allie had had every single person, five people that had the next top scores, the sum of that was still less than Tony, because he got so many confessionals and because he won. So it was essentially the who had Tony on their team wins. But anyway, let's BNB rewind.
Mate.
Yeah. To talk about the thing that I was also
talking about, the comic.
Oh, yes. Buff whelk in the thicket. Yes. So that can be our choose your own adventure. We'll write it up, and then we'll make Robin Akiva play the adventures of Buff Whelk in the thicket.
This is something that needs to happen at some point. Listen, we have enough episodes here in our rewind. I think we can probably figure out a time to bring up their misadventures once more.
Okay, yeah, that's what we'll do. If I ever write a choose your own adventure for one of them, I'll be sure to feature the prominent characters.
All right, for this last one, Leon, I'm throwing in a bit of a twist here. I know this is the era of no twists on Survivor, but I'm going to list three items you have to order for me from most to least in terms of cholesterol. So what has the most cholesterol, the middle amount of cholesterol, and the least amount of cholesterol between the cow brain, the fun size Snickers bar, and tripe?
Ooh. Okay. I know what cholesterol is. So, and it's, is it the good kind of cholesterol or the bad kind of cholesterol?
I don't know. I guess it depends on like the number. Maybe that's the indicator. Is like maybe a lean amount means that it's only good cholesterol, but like if there's a lot in it, it's like it can't be all be good cholesterol.
Anyone who knows anything about nutrition is like, he's freaking idiot. What are they? No, my mom told me there's good and bad kinds of cholesterol.
Yeah, I believe there is as well.
She has a lot of bad, but she also has a lot of good. So her doctor said it's fine, but my mom still only like wants to eat quinoa or something. I don't know. I stopped listening at a certain point. It was just, it was too much. Okay. Cow brain, Snickers, and tripe. Whew. I want to say the Snickers because Snickers is bad for you, but I have a feeling like that's not the case. I'm going to go with tripe.
Has the most?
Yes, has the most. Okay. I have to rank them.
Rank them. Power okay. rank them.
Power. Okay, I'm going to power rank them. I'm going to say tripe, Snickers, and then cow brains.
You couldn't be more wrong.
Oh, no!
In third place, fun size Snickers bar with 0 milligrams of cholesterol.
Oh, that's healthy.
I mean, I guess I think it's like a crap ton of sugar, but there's no cholesterol in it, good or bad. It's like a chaotic neutral Snickers bar. Second place, tripe, 220 milligrams per portion.
Oh.
And first place with a resounding success, cow brain, 2,635 milligrams of cholesterol.
Damn, son. The cow brain is... Watch those arteries, cow brain.
I suppose so. I did not realize it'd be a heart clogger, though. Maybe this is, again, over 2,500 milligrams of good cholesterol, so it can't all be bad.
Okay, maybe it's okay. I'm now also just thinking about doing an alignment chart for candy bars. So if Snicker is chaotic neutral, what's chaotic evil?
Evil has to be something... Like, what's that bar, like the fast break bar? Like, what's a bar that has like too much crap thrown into it?
Oh, yeah. The fast break is like a pretzel plus chocolate plus caramel. It's weird that it's got a pretzel in it.
Yeah, I would say the fast break is probably the chaotic evil at this point. I'm trying to think of like what other evil candies there are.
I think is butterscotch lawful good because it's just or lawful neutral. What's good? An apple?
Yes, the best kind of candy, an apple. Though an apple has saturated fat in it more so than a Welk, so it's not as buff as that. I guess lawful good would be like a Hershey bar, right? Like a plain Hershey bar. It feels like something you could go to. It's like a stand up bar. It represents something very simple, very wholesome.
Some people don't like chocolate, though.
Well, then why are they in here?
Yeah, get away from our alignment chart of candy bars.
Yeah, go to your Jolly Rancher bars or whatever fruit bars you got going on.
Fruit bars, my popsicles. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Eventually, we'll do, as the summer months come on, we'll have to do an alignment chart of popsicles.
Did I tell you one time I tried to make my own popsicles?
What?
So I bought from IKEA. They have this little popsicle thing where, you know, you have like you pour the liquid in the mold, whatever, you stick it in, mm-hmm. you freeze it. Okay, so I just bought pink lemonade from the store. I made it and I froze it. But when it was frozen, because there was no, like, the water part is frozen. So you're just eating the flavor, it was painful to eat. They were in, because it's like the sour sweet of pink lemonade on times 10. Way too much. So then I melted all the popsicles, poured them back in the jar, like the pitcher, added more water, and then tried to remake them. They were awful, Mike.
So you thought, all right, let me mix them back together, get them co-mingling once more, and then maybe we could separate this out and it'll all work again.
My thought process was, it's too concentrated, so I have to dilute them. So instead of just throwing away the dollar or whatever, because it wasn't even the full thing of lemonade, like they were tiny, I was like, no. Liana needs to spend several more hours trying to solve this problem. Oh my God, they were horrible.
Yeah, you're like, I gotta get the control back in.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, do I keep one frozen to be able to compare? I don't know.
Now, did you like stick popsicle sticks in them, or did you like just like put pop them out and like, I don't know, lick them in your hand? Like, did you try to create something to hold the popsicle with?
Just hold it in my hand and lick it.
Just hold a colored ice cube in your hand and lick it.
No, put it on a plate and lick it. No. I had the thing from IKEA comes with little sticky sticks that you stick in them.
I'm glad. Well, that's Hensler name.
You know, you get what I'm saying. So, I mean, oh man, I'm having those memories now. And then I kept them in my freezer for like a year and a half.
What?
Because they were bad. And I was like, but I can't throw them. Like, I really try to not throw food away. Like, food waste really bothers me. And so yeah,
to the point where
reason,
you poured the pink lemonade back into the jar.
And every couple months, I tried them again, thinking maybe this time they'll be good.
Oh my God. So you had like this weird, like, complex with this pink lemonade, which you're like, maybe this time it'll be good.
Yeah, right. Like, maybe now it's good. This is not like wine, Liana. It doesn't age.
Yeah, we know that popsicles only get better with time.
Aging like a fine popsicle, I think that's what they say.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the phrase amongst all the ice cream vendors.
Right. Common in their lexicon, much like sourcing. So it was a mess.
Oh, if only Keith could have sourced local ingredients to make popsicles. Ogacore would have loved that in the heat. After they went to the whirlpool, as Marilyn called it.
That's right, the family whirlpool or whatever, where it was just, we're all just going to hang out. Oh, that was a really, really fun editing moment. Where was it? I can't remember who was like, oh, I don't think there's any fish out there.
Yeah, it was Mitchell. And then the camera went right below the surface of the water and showed the fish swimming around.
There's a ton of fish. Oh, that was so good. That was hilarious.
Well, Liana, congratulations. I think we've all learned a little bit about not only nutritional facts about the various things survivors ate, but your own popsicle making expertise. So I think we're all the winners here.
My popsicle making adventure. If only I knew how many calories. I bet there's no cholesterol. So at least I was good there. Okay. Do I ask a question now?
Yeah, whatever you want to talk about, or you just want to move on. I think we're sort of being loose and fancy free. If the past half hour has not been an indicator of that at this point.
Yeah, I was trying to think of a question. The only one that was good that I could come up with was, can you fish a rubber ducky out of a bathtub? Because I was obsessed with that confessional from Colby.
Colby is a, like, I think just because of the reputation we have from Colby, we don't really remember him as like a survivor character. We remember him as like hunk, challenge beast, you know, nearly won the game. But he is a stealth confessional giver. Like, he had that moment. He's gonna have the I ain't no Hershey bar. Like, he is maybe one of my favorite confessional givers in survivor history because he is so stealthily funny.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And I don't know if he intended. I maybe, but it doesn't really matter because it's entertaining.
I think it's the Jerry thing, because he's also an aspiring actor. Like, do you not remember when he started the movie Red Eye after this?
Classic, the classic. Yes, of course.
I forgot. I think he played like an FBI agent or something. Something like that. But yeah, so obviously he's going to go on to have like his own career in television and film. So it's clear that like he knew he was, you know, giving it to the camera. But yeah, that was a fun little, this episode was surprisingly light on Colby in honor of Jerry, I suppose. But that was a fun little moment from him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, be careful, you know, don't remind Rob, otherwise we're gonna have a Santa's summer house situation on our hands.
Like Colby Donaldson as Keith's head bodyguard. Interesting. It's not Keith, it's Keith.
Keith?
Yeah, it's K-E-F-E. E. I believe it's the character Linda Keith, played by Beth Toussaint, but I like to think that it's a reference to Keith.
Keith.
Yeah, exactly. So you can't sue a CBS. It's not Keith. It's Keith.
It's Keith. Maybe Keith can make a guest appearance in Buff Welk and the Thicket or whatever was.
I think Keith should be their enemy.
Oh, yes. The villain. Of course. Every good story needs a villain.
It's a villain. In this case, it's Keith and his head bodyguard, Colby Donaldson. Or wait, Dolby Connaldson.
Yeah, right. Don't sue us. Making popsicles. It's totally different. It's totally different, you guys. That reminds me. I think I love this story so much. There's an interview with Vanilla Ice where he's talking about the
Under Pressure versus Ice Ice Baby.
Exactly. Yes. And he's like, no. Theirs goes like this. Dun 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 dun. Dun 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 dun. And ours goes like this. Dun 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 dun. So it's totally different. And he's like 100% serious in the interview.
Yeah, so our Dolby Connaldson doesn't wear a cowboy hat. He wears
fedora.
Yeah, he wears a fedora. Dolby Connaldson, the fedora wearing enemy of the Thicket and the Buff Welk.
That's amazing. Well, speaking of things that are amazing, we are going to play a game where, Mike, you are going to have to guess what country contains what giant thing. So last week we talked about big things in Australia. We talked about the banana, the prawn, the big hand with the little hand on the finger of the big hand, which I have since seen a picture of and is super creepy.
It's very weird.
Yeah, which is hilarious because we didn't know at the time what episode we were going to be doing next. And so I just thought that it was so fitting.
It's so weird that we ended up going to Australia. Granted, they don't visit these because they're far away from it. Do you think that's where they should have gone on one of those reward trips?
Ooh, yes, I think so. Or maybe that's what the pre-jury people did. Like, who knows? Maybe they got to see some of these icons of Australia.
Ooh, before. I can't imagine Cal visiting the giant croc. Or the giant beef jerky statue, probably.
Yeah, he worships the giant beef jerky
statue.
He tries
to nibble on it.
No, it was just God damn it.
I just went to the giant piece of grass and I smushed it in my jaw and I was chewing on it.
That's right. It's actually a giant piece of grass. Mike, get your story straight. Okay. So because we talked about that, like, let's just continue this stupid conversation. And so what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to guess what country this big thing exists in. So you only have two options. OK, so it's just the U.S. or Australia. OK, now what I did, just because everybody's a stickler for rules, I removed some things that existed as multiples.
So there are duplicates in countries.
So there is big. Like the Big Apple, not like the Big Apple, like New York, but Big Apples in Australia, USA, New Zealand, and Canada.
Oh my God, imagine the saturated fat.
I know, right? It's way more than a worm or whatever the comparison was. So those got removed. Okay, so we're doing things that are unique. There was only, as far as I could tell, one big version of that item.
Wow,
okay?
One of a kind.
I know. I'm also not including things that are not currently up, as far as I can tell. So, for example, I really wanted to include the big Slurpee, but that was dismantled in 2009. So, sadly, I could not include
Why?
That. I don't know why they would ever dismantle the big Slurpee. I have no clue.
Maybe everyone got brain freeze from looking at it.
They were like, this is too much. This is too much saturated fat in this Slurpee.
I need to watch my weight here. I don't want to become a Thicket.
No Thickets here. If you want to follow along, I have pulled pictures. So, Mike, I sent you the link in the chat. And then if anyone else is interested in this stupid game, you can go to bit.ly/bigthingsbnb. So I know. I told Puya, I was like, can I say that? Can I make that a thing? That is bit.ly/bigthingsbnb, all lowercase. So the word big, the word things, plural, and the word BNB, no keef. Okay, so just big things, BNB. All right, Mike, now you have the pictures of these items. I did have to make some edits to some of the pictures. The weird white polygons that are really Ooh. Ugly. Because I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want to give anything away. So for example, okay. there's a flag in one.
Okay, I was going to say, is there like a sign that's like, welcome to USA. Here's this right. giant thing.
There were also a few things I was like, I should cover them. There's an ad that I covered because I didn't know if it would give it away. I really
oh, I thought you meant like
this.
A pop-up ad on your computer.
No. Like in the picture, you can see an advertisement in the background. And I was like, oh my gosh, will Mike be able to game the system? And
well, I do very well know the Australian adverts. So
obviously, of course. All right, let's just go ahead and jump on in. So your first thing that you have to identify is the big mango. And there is a man for scale, or maybe a child, perhaps. I don't know how tall the child is.
How old do you think this guy is?
I don't really want to play that game, Mike.
Let's age this poor. No, this looks like a little kid. It kind of looks like Spencer Bledsoe.
It does. Maybe it is Spencer Bledsoe.
All right.
Young lad.
So I think that's then like, this is probably what, at least 10 Spencers high, which is pretty, pretty high. Let's leave that away with Spencer. I'm going to say this is mango. I feel like the fruit, like mango does not feel very American to me. So I'm going to go with Australia.
That is correct. Yes, this is in Australia. I didn't know if the foliage would give it away, but I was like, yeah, I'm sure places in the U.S. look this way too. But
yeah, I mean, I would not, you could see that like plumage at Hollywood Boulevard or in Miami. But I don't think Miami would have a giant mango.
Maybe. Maybe they should get on it. They got to, you know, if we're going to be great, you know, we got to get those big ass mangoes. So
exactly.
All right. And it's not real. Sorry. I just want to make that clear. It's not a real mango.
It's unreal. Well, this is not James and the Giant Peach situation where there are a bunch of bugs and a little British boy living in the mango.
I loved that. Okay.
I liked it. I liked the book more, hashtag like Hip Survives, but it was a little scary to me because remember when his parents got killed by rhinos and then there was a rhino in the clouds that was haunting him the entire time?
Yeah, no, that was terrifying, actually, now that you brought back that horrible memory. That was very, very scary.
I also couldn't eat crinkle-cut fries for a very long time after that movie, because if you remember, like, the little green glowy worms that make the peach grow were, like, iridescent green crinkle-cut fries. And so I felt like I was eating worms every time I saw that afterwards.
Well, you wouldn't have done well on the gross food eating challenges.
I can't eat the worm! I'm the opposite of Kimmy. It reminds me of James and the Giant Peach.
Weirdest association yet, but I'm here for it. Yeah, so all right, well, let's move on from Spencer Bledsoe and the giant mango and move to our next large item, which is a big fork.
Ooh, which, by the way, I think our next little literary venture after the adventures of Buff Welk and Thicket is definitely Spencer Bledsoe and the giant mango.
Oh my god. Okay, yeah, well, we'll make sure to not include any little creatures that remind you of fries. We don't want to ruin
fry-based creatures in this.
Okay, good note, thanks.
All right, so the fork. All right, so first off, the fork is sticking straight out of the ground. I'm trying to look at this architecture here. This brick building feels very, like, early 20th century American to me. So I'm going to say the USA.
That is correct. Yes, I thought you would be like, oh, Americans are fat, so forks. But yes, the giant fork, which looks like, you know, they forked someone's lawn, but just with one giant fork.
Well, this was a prank.
Yeah, this was a prank that was played on this clear office building or whatever it is. All right. Next item up is the jumping crocodile.
Yeah, so this is a crocodile that is on its tail. It's vertical. But it looks like it's jumping. Is it like bouncing on its tail, or is it like jumping and the tail is still dragging on the ground?
That's a good question. I think it just, well, it's jumping. So I think it jumped in the air and its tail is just heavy and it's also fake and a statue and they needed some way to hold
maybe
it
I shouldn't
up.
Maybe question so. The actions and motives of a statue of a crocodile. So
we're doing character work. Like, let's get into the what would the jumping crocodile be
yeah
doing?
What is it jumping from? Its father, perhaps. Here's my thought process. Like, crocodile, the first thing I think is Australia, but did you want me to think Australia and go with USA? I think that's a legitimate thing that you can do, so I'm gonna say America.
No, I'm unfortunately, Mike, it was Australia.
Too far into it.
I thought you might overthink it, which is why I included it. So
you know me too well.
I told myself, Liana, you can't do a crocodile. He'll know immediately. And then I was like, no, he wouldn't think that I would think we're going to Princess Bride this. Yeah, right?
You did. And I drank the poison.
Yes. Next up, this is included because it is so ugly. It is technically, by description, a buffalo.
It looks like, from this angle, it looks like a cow version of Jimmy Neutron.
Oh, because the horse looks like his hair.
Yeah.
It looks like someone made an ugly paper mache Jimmy Neutron buffalo.
They're like, crap. Yep, this is my statue. Please put it up.
Ta-da. Oh man, the Guinness Book of World Records people are coming tomorrow. Crap, we need to finish.
Oh no, we're supposed to make the statue of Jimmy Neutron. Well, I guess he'll have four legs in this version and be completely nude.
Yeah, that's what's weird. It's not, buffaloes are not like pink. What is this?
It's really weird, and that makes me think it has to be American, because I feel like this is the type of craftsmanship that would go into this type of thing.
Oh no, Mike, you judge wrong.
No!
It was Australia. Here's the thing. This is sort of technically a trick question because there is a giant buffalo in the US, but this one is so ugly, I just had to include it.
Oh my God, I can't stop looking at it. Now this is going to replace the rhino in my James and the Giant Peach-filled dreams.
Yeah, that will be in Spencer Bledsoe and the Giant Mango. This will be
he's gonna
the
be haunted.
Nightmare.
Yeah, the Jimmy Neutron nude buffalo killed his parents.
Yeah.
It's like that meme. Go to sleep. Jimmy Neutron nude buffalo doesn't exist.
Yeah. That's terrifying. Or you can use that for anything. The guy like sleeping turned away where it's like, oh, I'm pretty sure he's thinking about breaking up with me. That's the thought. Oh, well, here's another thing for your nightmares. This is the Big Chainsaw, which its nickname is Big Gus.
Oh, interesting. Do you think Gus was the man who made it? Is Gus like, did he just choose to name the thing Gus?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. Like, is it a monument to someone who worked with chainsaws frequently? A craftsman, perhaps. We don't know here.
Liana, as you and I both know from cat's lore, Gus the theater cat is short for asparagus. Could that also be this? Could this be an ode to asparagus?
Yes, that's definitely what that is. My first thought when you said that was someone chopping down asparagus with a chainsaw.
Oh, listen, if it's a girthy stalk of asparagus, you're going to need something to cut through that baby.
I was like, doesn't it just grow out of the ground? Like, it just sticks up out of the ground. You just, like, yank it out. I don't think you need that. But maybe, yeah, maybe this is the thicket version of the asparagus.
Yeah,
really
big Gus. I'm going to say, I feel like Big Gus could be, like, an affectionate Australian nickname, but I feel like it wouldn't I feel like it would cheekily name its chainsaws, so I would say Australia.
This is good old USA.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember where Big Gus is. It's just like along the side of the road. This was, and it actually doesn't look that big. This is probably the best picture because of the perspective and the angle that the photo is taken at. But exciting nonetheless.
It's in Ishpeming, Michigan, apparently.
Ah, yes. Oh, there was one place in the U.S., somewhere in Illinois, I think, that had a bunch of really big things. It felt like they were going for some sort of record. They had like the world's largest knitting needles and something else.
So you think they're just like finding objects and are like, all right, world's biggest lamp, world's biggest phone charger, just like looking around at things and making them giant?
If you break a Guinness, a few questions. One, is there a Guinness World Record for big items? Like the world, like if you have the world's biggest thing, is that one thing? And then the other thing is, do you get money for winning the Guinness Book of World Records, or is it just notoriety and your name in the book?
I feel like it's notoriety, though I feel like the money comes in when you can say, like, hey, we're a Guinness winners, and that's going to inevitably bring more foot traffic. You know, like, you're going to make more income by notoriety, and that notoriety is going to come with the Guinness record. So it sort of is like a transitive property.
Okay. Okay. All right. So that makes sense. Yeah. It's like, you know,
because the thing is, like, then if your record gets broken, would you have to like give money back if you were given money in the first place?
Yeah, that's a good question. But if you just lose the title if something else is made that's bigger than you, which I guess is less money changing hands.
Otherwise, you could run a scheme where like you and another guy are like, okay, first I'm going to grow the world's biggest pumpkin. Then you're going to grow one like 1 inch bigger. And then I'm going to grow one inch bigger than that. And they'll just keep trading money back and forth. And Dennis will just completely have to go broke and declare bankruptcy.
I declare bankruptcy. But they would declare the biggest bankruptcy. The world's biggest bankruptcy.
I wonder if there's a record for that at this point.
Maybe. I hope not. That would be sad. Well, speaking of big things, let's continue our list. The next thing is, okay, the world's biggest bench.
Ooh.
As soon as I saw this, I was like, this is a Dan Lembo
type situation. Yes, it looks just like Dan Lembo in the giant chair from Gulliver's Travels.
Yeah, they had pictures of just the bench, but you really couldn't tell the size because it's just a bench. So obviously I had to include a picture with a little person. By a little person, I mean like what appears to be a, you know, 5'6" person sitting on the bench. So do you think this is Australian or United States?
I'm looking at the power lines and I'm trying to see if they're traditional Australian set of power lines.
As you would know.
As I know from, I am an Australian electrician by night. That is my other career.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say that this is, see, there's so much arid, dusty land. That feels Australian to me. I'm going to go with Australia.
That is correct. Yes. When I take my tour of Australia, I'm going to have to go see the big bench.
See, I'll admit it sort of gave it away with the power lines. I know exactly how they stand in Australia.
I know. I should block those out, too. Well, let's see if you can get this. I'm trying to now look in the background. I see a transformer in the back, maybe. So, or is that a trash can? Are you going to know Australian trash cans?
Oh, yeah.
Cans?
I do know recycling bins.
Yes. Okay, good. Well, this is the world's largest pecan, which, of course, is not a pecan and is also not particularly large. But I guess as a ratio, like compared to a normal size pecan, this is very large.
Yeah, I guess so. It looks more like an almond than a pecan.
It does look like an almond. Do you say pecan or pecan?
I say pecan personally.
Pecan.
Like, yes, pecan.
Yeah, yes, pecan.
That's going to be the catchphrase of pecan.
Biggest catchphrase. All right. Was USA or Australia?
All right. Let's see here. So pecans, I feel like a pecan pie is like a very American type of dessert. Whereas I don't feel like Australian really incorporates that into their baking. And I feel like if it was Australia, the world's largest pecan would be so much bigger given the mango. So I'm going to say this is America.
That's correct. Yes, this is American. And there's a plaque dedicated to it. So congrats. I think if someone else were to make a bigger pecan, they'd have to take the sign down. So
yeah, exactly.
Give back the money, but we'll see. The garden gnome is up next.
Oh my goodness.
Largest. Now this is a thick boy.
Yeah, this is as big as a barn. It's got a nice hourglass figure. Baby, I could waste time watching this thing. I'll tell you what.
No. Do not tell me what. Please.
All right, let's see here. I don't know how much the garden gnome is a part of lawn society in Australia as much as it is America. So I feel like Americans would be the first to create a giant gnome. So I'm going to say America.
Yes, that is correct. Good work, Mike.
Where is this garden gnome located?
I don't know. I have to look it up real quick. It's the world's largest garden gnome, so that
and
should
it's,
hopefully...
It's like holding, flowers. Is it like courting someone? Does it need the world's largest garden gnome?
Aw, that'd be so cute. It needs to... It's trying to find its partner. Let's see. So... New York. It's in New York somewhere.
Oh, yes. Accord, New York. I also see a website that reads Noam Chomsky, world's third largest garden gnome.
See? Get on that. Maybe he was the largest at one point in time.
Yeah, and they couldn't put stilts on him.
Yeah. Oh, that's so sad. That's cheating anyway. You have to rebuild the gnome, people. Now, this one is called the Big Sausage King.
Oh!
So this is royalty we're dealing with, Mike. Yeah, treat him with some respect.
Hot dog. All right, let's look here. So this is a hot dog with bun standing, wearing what looks like athletic socks and sneakers, and seemingly covering his head in ketchup.
Yeah, that's weird. Is he anointing himself?
Or is it like a Gatorade thing? Like, it's clear he just worked out, right?
You're right. He's got the workout socks on, like the tennis socks.
Like, he just played a game of pickup basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, I can't wait to have a nice cold ketchup bath.
Ew.
I wonder if it's controversial to people, because I feel like some people would be like, you know, ketchup on a hot dog is disgusting. Why is he doing that? Why isn't it mustard? Why are there, you know, toppings whatsoever? Why is there even a bun?
Are you a condiment person?
I like ketchup and mustard on hot dogs. I was obviously, as I've told before in other podcasts, I was a famously a picky eater. So it took me a while to build up. I had to like start with hot dog, then hot dog plus bun, then hot dog plus bun plus ketchup. And then I can move on to mustard, because mustard's that one that's like a little dabble do ya, because especially if it's like particularly spicy, that's all you're going to taste.
Yeah, right. I love the fact that you had to work up to eating a whole hot dog.
It's a scale, Leon, okay?
Yeah. Proud of you. Proud of you, Mike.
It's a program. All right. So I'm going to say, see, the Sausage King makes me feel like I wonder if they don't say hot dog in Australia. I'm going to say this is Australia.
That is correct. I don't know how that worked, but that's amazing.
I feel like, I don't know. Do they say hot dog in Australia?
That's a good question. I'm trying to think if I've ever heard that.
I'm thinking back to the only time I've heard an Australian say hot dog was one time when I was on with Nick Yadanza. He also put me through an Australian quiz, and he talked about how they had recently had elections for a prime minister, and to incentivize people to go to the polls, they were offering free hot dogs to people. But I can't remember if he said hot dog or sausages.
Oh, interesting. So, yeah, because when I think of a hot dog, I think of, oh, yeah, like a baseball hot dog. That's the first thing that pops into my head.
Yeah.
Not a sausage.
And let's see. Yeah, I mean, I think snag is, I believe, another slang term.
Do Australians say hot dog? Is that a weird question to text Shannon? Too late. Okay, maybe we'll find out. Well, speaking of sausages, our next item is the giant shuttlecock.
What? Oh my god, that thing is giant.
It's huge.
That thing is massive.
I know. It's like as tall as a giant government building.
It is. Now, look, I appreciate the angle on it. It's at like a specific 45 degrees. So, like, I feel like that takes some science behind it.
Oh, yeah. No,
or at least,
this
like,
is
weight balance. Well, I feel like a shuttlecock, all the weight is balanced in the tip of it.
Oh, like a real one.
Exactly. So they had to model it after. This is no flesh-colored Jimmy Neutron buffalo.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So someone just played, some giants just played badminton in front of this whatever building. Do you think that they played in Australia or the United States?
I feel like this has to be Australia, because no Americans are so committed to badminton that they are going to like dedicate an entire monument to its paraphernalia.
This is the USA.
Wow.
This is
in
Kansas
American
City.
Sports knowledge just surprises me.
Yeah, it's in Kansas City. So, you know, if you ever want to see it, it's just out on the lawn. It weighs 5,500 pounds.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. It's crazy. So, yeah. And then there's also a museum where you can see more shuttlecocks. So,
wait, what?
If you're into that type of thing. Yeah, there's like a museum. It's like a badminton museum or something.
Oh, okay. Well, now that makes more sense. I just thought they were just going to randomly plop a statue of a shuttlecock in the middle of Kansas City.
It's an art museum. So, I mean, close.
You know, natural comparison.
It's art.
I suppose. I mean, it is the most artistic of sports equipment. There's feathers involved. There are colors. Mm.
Yeah, right.
It makes a statement.
Yeah, it's modern art. It can be anything. Modern art can be anything. I think it makes a statement. Look, it made us go, oh my gosh. So
Do you say shuttlecock or birdie?
Shuttlecock.
I mean, I guess that should have been the obvious answer with you.
I was going to say birdie when you have the option to say shuttlecock and get away with it because it's a totally normal phrase or word.
Which is why when gym teachers teach badminton, they never let that word escape their mouths.
Right, exactly. It's always the birdie. Shash Jordan Kalish. Get him to weigh in here. Okay, Mike, our last thing is technically called the big wave.
Whoa, that's a thing?
It's so ugly.
It looks like a beached whale with a giant mouth and has a surfboard in it.
If we thought the buffalo was ugly, this thing is a mess.
This is the fuggliest stucco project I think I've ever seen.
This type of art makes us go, wow, in a bad way.
Yeah, well, it legitimately looks like it has, like, an eye, so that's why I keep thinking whale. And you can see, like, little fins on it. I mean, this just looks terrible. And there's a surfboard in the middle of it, but there's not a person on it, which makes me feel like it's, like, a ghost surfboard or someone fell off.
So I think it's definitely for photo ops. So you can get in there and pretend like you're being eaten. I mean, surfing.
Yeah, exactly. I was devoured by the giant whale creature.
I know. It looks like a mouth. It looks like a mouth. When I was reading, because I was reading the Wikipedia articles for large things in X country, and there was no picture of this item or this thing. And I had to go and look it up because I was like, I have to know what this looks like. And when I saw it, I was just aghast. It's so ugly.
Oh, God. Okay. Well, so we know that the buffalo was Australian, right?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm trying to think, like, is it going to exist in a similar aesthetic? Or are we going to balance out the nations here? I feel like Australia has a greater appreciation for surfing, right? Like, the time of rocket power has died out in the United States. Surfing is no longer a thing. So I don't exactly know if they would dedicate a monument to it. So in honor of the great Ross from Australian Survivor, who recently came into the news and for not so fun reasons, I'm going to say Australia.
That is correct. Yes. Good job, Mike. You win nothing. But
all right. Well, no, I think I win a better appreciation. I win a lot of nightmare fuel from these abominations of sculptures.
You're welcome.
I greatly appreciate it. Before we get into our next game, I just want to take a second to talk about this, the rock jumping challenge, because it's so interesting in so many ways. Like, I think there's a bit of a Mandela effect where I think we just remember that the challenge was jump off a rock when it really was like jump off a rock, you know, grab onto the crate and then like whitewater raft with the crate until you get to the beach. That's a crazy component to me.
Yeah, that part I did not remember at all. Yeah, and it was just so fascinating. I was like, wait, what is happening right now?
The poor Roger can barely swim. Like, he jumps off the cliff, hobbles, you know, doggy paddles to the crate, and then has to hang on for dear life as these rapids are like throwing him around before they get to the beach.
Yeah, there's a difference between just swimming in calm water and having to not be swept away in rapids, which is something that we saw here. I also did not remember the most triumphant old westerny music.
Oh my God, and the Ring of Fire taking them into the challenge. Oh, so good. I mean, it's all out of Butch and Sundance, or as Alicia put it, Sundance.
Yes, the Sundance Festival.
You all see Sundance?
Yeah, when they call, because that was the challenge name, right? It was Butch Cassidy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Then I was like, oh, okay, that makes way more sense. At first, I was like, what is happening right now?
I love that, though. I mean, I loved that they built into, like, the natural topography of it. Like, we've seen this a couple times when they go to Africa and they have to, like, run across the hills and fields. I think that's a lot better than like having to build something into a rock face or construct something entirely. It's like, hey, we have this giant cliff. Why don't we use that for something?
Oh, yeah. No, it was super cool. That was another moment where I did miss for a second. I missed it more in this, the Jeff Probst commentary. But I did enjoy the fact, I guess it wasn't necessary because there is no puzzle at the end, right? So it's just, you can just say who's like what team's ahead and what team's behind.
And it does say that in the lower third.
Right, exactly, exactly. So then that's the replacement for not having any of Jeff Probst's commentary. But then there was that one body cam movement where Roger had a cam, like looked like it was his POV. Or do you think that that was recorded beforehand?
It's a good question. Like, was it a dream teamer? Like when they describe the challenges and people walk through it? Because yeah, it'd be weird to be like, oh, this is going to be a good moment. Roger, put on this body cam.
Yeah, right. Just you, though, because we only have one, okay? We can only spare one. And yours will be the most epic, so we're going to use it.
I also thought it was pretty crazy that, so they were playing for two blankets, which is like a crazy minimalistic reward. But then when they bring the crate over, Jeff goes, all right, Okakor, open up that crate inside of the blankets. Like, what? That they had the reward the entire time?
Well, yeah, because he said when he was saying, oh, the once what did he say? He said something along the lines of your blankets are in the box. I was like, no, they're not. There's no way they're actually in the box. They're just going to be soaking wet.
Yeah,
sure
they
enough,
go, come back to camp with your wet blankets. Have a good night.
Enjoy. Don't catch a cold.
And no wonder why Okakor was having trouble sleeping. It's because they had these like sopping wet blankets from the war challenge.
Yeah. When they popped open the top, like, oh, they were actually in there. I wonder if they were wet or if somebody just did a really good job sealing the containers, because that's impressive.
Do you think they should do that for all challenges? Like when they're like, you're going to have to hurl this heavy chest across this field. It's like, I bet you're wondering where the pizzas are. Open up the chest.
Oh, 100%. That would be amazing.
You're probably wondering where your family members are. Open up the puzzle box.
Oh, that's so much better. Because I was thinking if they, you know, when they do the peanut butter, jelly, bread, milk kind of thing. But if they're having to throw the milk around, it's just butter by the end.
Yeah, exactly. Or it's just like, it's peanut butter jelly sandwich is just like covered in milk and peanut butter everywhere.
Yeah. If you thought Fijian pizza was bad before, wait till you see
wait till
after
it's splattered on a crate that you have to lick it off like it's one of Liana's popsicles.
Yeah. But you wish you had a popsicle now, buddy.
So for our last game, I wanted to make things a bit extracurricular. So I don't know if you remember this, Liana, since you were a bit of a Johnny Come Lately 2 Survivor, but in 2001, Survivor hit a huge boom. The marketability was palpable. So Survivor, in all its wisdom, came out with a CD-ROM game called Survivor the Interactive Game. Do you have any knowledge of this?
Yes. So I know that this exists. And every single time I hear about it, I'm like, oh my God, I really want to play that so bad. So this is making me have that feeling. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so
I've never played it. So I know it exists. That's what I'm trying to say. I know it exists, but I never
played it. I owned it. I tried to play it multiple times, but it crashed on my dad's computer so many times. I never got past the first challenge. The computer would crash. And then so all I could experience were the first 2 days. I would never even got to vote at Tribal Council. But there are so many interesting elements of them trying to bring Survivor to this game. And so, Liana, what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about a specific facet of the game, and I'm going to list out 5 options. 4 of them are actual things that existed within the game, and 1 of them is something I made up. It is up to you to figure out what I made up that was not, in fact, involved in Survivor the Interactive Game.
Okay, I'm super excited. Let's figure this out.
All right, so let's start here. So first off, you can pick to be any person from the first 2 seasons, or you can create your own character.
Oh, no.
And as a character, you can... First of all, there are several custom characters you can create, like Ron, the mustachioed lawyer. But there are stats that you have, no matter who you pick.
Oh, my God.
So which of these 5 is the fake stat for a character on Survivor the Interactive Game? Running, empathy, cunning, fieldcraft, or intelligence?
What is fieldcraft?
You tell me.
Okay. Running, empathy, fieldcraft, intelligence. And what was the other one?
Cunning.
Oh, and cunning.
Not to be confused with running.
Right. Of course. Yes. Very different skill set. Okay, well, there has to be like some sort of physical skill. So I'm going to say, because that would be like a challenge, like challenge ability. So I'm going to say running is real. The weird one that you said, I don't know what it is. I'm going to say that's real because it's too weird for you to make up. I'm going to say, I think empathy is real because that would be like social game. Okay, I'm going to say cunning is the false one.
You were so close. Intelligence was not a statistic, surprisingly, for a character. Running, empathy, cunning, and fieldcraft are all parts of stats you can make for your character.
What is fieldcraft?
Well, funny you should ask that. Oh, so after you pick your character, you are taken into what's known as a survival period. Now, these exist between every reward, every challenge. So like going into a reward challenge and going into an immunity challenge, it's essentially camp life. You are given 3 minutes to assign yourself to a task, and we just watch your character do that task for 3 minutes. So for those of you saying, I would like to play this game, I will say this might be one of the most boring things I have ever seen in a video game. Because remember, it's 3 full minutes done twice an episode for about 13 episodes.
What? So you don't do the chat, like the thing, like you just watch your person do it for 3 minutes.
Yes, if you assign yourself to a role, which that being said, which of these roles can you not assign yourself during the survival period? Water carrier, hunting/fishing, shelter builder, fire tender, or cook?
Oh, fire builder or cook. What? Okay. What would you watch someone do for 3 minutes? I feel like you could watch them hunt. I feel like you could watch them build a shelter. Would you watch them tend a fire? Would you watch them carry water? Who would want to do any of these things? Okay, I'm going to pick fire tenderer because that's got to be so boring.
I'm sorry, unfortunately that is real. The correct answer, no shelter building in Survivor, the interactive game. Apparently your shelter has already been worked on. Don't need to worry about that.
Thank you, Boston. Oh, I guess this is before Boston Rob. Yeah, I was going to say he's already been there.
I guess you could say, I don't know. BB, he worked in construction. Maybe it's him. But yeah, everything else, water carrier, who I think just carries water like to this barrel that has a water droplet on it to symbolize the water. There's hunting and fishing, which is probably the most active one. Fire tender, where you literally grab wood, go back to the fire, repeat, etc. And cook, which was sourcing local ingredients, I suppose.
Of course. Okay, sure. Video game, that was a choice.
Well, the good news, Liana, is during a survival period, you're not exactly just stuck to watching somebody tend a fire or carry water. You can choose to converse with members of your tribe. And this is by far the most fascinating part of the game, in my opinion, because this is how you build like camaraderie with people. There are charts that track the emotional intelligence of, or emotional like energy, they call it, of you and your tribe members. So based on the conversations you'll have with them, their mood will either to you will either rise or fall, and that'll sort of impact who votes for you or against you.
Okay, so you have to make everybody enjoy their conversations with you, otherwise they'll vote you out.
Or like turn people against other people, you know, because
you can do that.
Well, this leads into the next question. So when you choose to talk to a person, you are given a prompt of several questions you can ask someone to start a conversation, which is not a question you can ask. How do you think I'm doing? Who do you think is going to be voted off next tribal council? What do you miss most? Who is annoying you the most? How are you holding up?
Okay, I am going to say that you can't be that direct about who would you vote off. So I'm going to say the second one, the vote one.
I'm sorry. You cannot ask who is annoying you the most.
Lame. But that's a question everybody wants to know.
Yeah. And it's a little weird because like people will give responses being like, oh, it's the end of the line for Keith. And then you can sort of give response to that, but you can't flat out ask, like, who's getting on your nerves, which this episode of Survivor was sort of like predicated upon, right? It's like, who is annoying people. But yes, you can flat out ask, who do you think is going to be voted off at the next tribal council? I think my favorite of these five was, how are you holding up? Because you were then given like several responses you can give to the person. And one of them is like, you'll do okay, only blank days left. But the best one is, I saw someone do this in the first survival period. So it was like day two. So it was, you'll do okay, only 38 days left, which sounds like the most passive aggressive, sarcastic thing to say to someone who's struggling.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Only like most of the entire game left for you to do. Oh my God, that's funny. I'm going to start using some of these phrases when I talk to people. We'll see how it happens.
Yeah, we'll see how much emotional energy is coming out of them by the end of it. All right, so obviously you get to do some challenges. Now you are a bit limited, obviously, with this being 2001 on the PC. But which is a challenge you cannot play in Survivor the Interactive Game? A slide puzzle of a kangaroo, shooting targets while paddling a dugout canoe, firing rocks out of a catapult by stomping on a log, shooting a blow dart at a target, or throwing torches into a giant wok.
What? Why would you throw torches into a giant wok?
You tell me.
Okay, I'm going to say that one's real because that's super weird. The blow darts one, I think, is also real. It was a slide puzzle. What slide was the one about rocks?
Yeah. Fire rocks out of a catapult by stomping on a log. It's sort of like, remember that challenge from Survivor Africa where you like stomp down on the lever and they toss like a little thing up into a basket? It's sort of that, but you're stomping on a log and a rock goes flying into like a, and whichever goes the furthest gets it.
I see. Okay. So one of these things is not like the other. The slide puzzle stands out. So I'm going to say the slide puzzle is the fake one.
Liana, the slide puzzle is what made my dad's computer crash oh so many times back in 2001.
If only I had known.
No, there was no shooting of blow darts at a target.
Oh,
but lame. Everything else, whether it's paddling a dugout canoe and shooting targets, whether it's firing rocks out of a catapult by stomping on a log, and yes, throwing torches into a giant wok are all challenges that are done on Survivor the Interactive Game. Not only that, the shooting targets is used, I think, like four different times. There's one with shooting them in the canoe. There's a slingshot one. There's like a spear one. They basically just repeated the same four games about, you know, three or four different times.
How do you win the wok one?
It was who they did like three rounds, and whoever had the most torches thrown into the wok won.
I must have missed that challenge.
Yeah, you didn't remember the giant challenge where they held lit torches and threw them into woks?
Oh, man. Yeah, Keith would be so upset about that misuse of cooking
equipment. Oh, no, we're going to use this to make a nice risotto.
We've sourced the ingredients now, guys. Stop it.
All right. Finally, these challenges sourced a good number of rewards over the course of the season, which is not a reward that contestants receive in Survivor the Interactive Game. And these are apply to both tribal and individual perspectives. A basket of fruit, a chocolate bar, a can of peaches and a tin of sardines, an evening with a family member, or a bottle of wine with cheese and crackers.
The can one is so weird. So that's real. Because why? Okay. Yes. I'm going to go with the wine and crackers.
I'm sorry. Jeff Probst wanted them to be a bit of a lush. No fruit for the wicked here. No basket of fruit. But yes, by far the weirdest one is can of peaches and a tin of sardines.
Like, what a weird combination.
Not a natural pairing whatsoever.
Yeah. That's so bizarre. That's so weird. Okay, sure. Maybe that's what I'll have to try for my next snack. Maybe it's good. Maybe they're, unexpected
pairing.
Yeah,
nothing
you
know, sweet and savory. Nothing says that like peaches and sardines.
Ew.
Oh, God. Yeah, just saying it like makes me disgusted.
James and the Giant Sardine. James and the Giant Can of Peaches. That one's worse.
Yeah, well, then that'd be also very hard to get out of and see New York while you're floating with the seagulls.
The Big Apple, but not the one that is in, you know, the big things category.
Exactly. Exactly. And I will say this is not a question, but the other fine, little, fun little quirk about Survivor, the interactive game, there is no strategy between the immunity challenge and tribal council. You, if you lose the challenge, you go directly there, and God help you if you know where the hell to vote.
Oh my God. So you have to do all your, well, it's not even strategizing.
No,
really.
You just have to ask, how are you holding up? And who do you think is going to get voted off at the next tribal council?
Oh my God, that's awful. You can definitely tell, like, this game was 100% fast-tracked, and so there was no quality control. They were like, it doesn't matter. People will buy it. People love Survivor. So we'll buy whatever crap we put out.
Suffice it to say, this is not the last Survivor game that is made, and we'll definitely put a pin in it, because something tells me we'll be talking about the other ones sometime soon. But as we're talking about Australia, and considering that all these challenges are supposed to take place in Australia, I wanted to dedicate some time about perhaps a forgotten part of Survivor Marketing's past.
Yeah, that was good. That I still, oh man, for some reason, I still really want to experience the terror for myself. Who doesn't want to watch my character just spend 3 minutes carrying water? But maybe I could just watch a review and get the
I did see, like, I'll send you a link. There is, like, the reason I was able to grab all these answers is because I did see, like, a full playthrough of it online, and it was 3.5 hours long because of all the damn survival periods.
Oh my God, Mike, how do you spend your time?
That's a great question.
Think about how many times you could stick your finger on Asher's nose and make
yeah, exactly.
Like,
listen, it was either that or have my son stick his finger in my mouth. So I opted for the former in this case.
Makes sense. Makes sense.
Now, this is all a nap time thing. Don't you worry. So I was able to spend my free time looking up nutritional facts about crickets and researching Survivor, the interactive game. But that's what we do here on the B&B. We bring out truly ridiculous facts about the world. And my God, Liana, did I have such a fun time here talking about mostly, like, extraneous things, but also a little bit about Survivor, the Australian Outback episode too.
Oh, right. That's the episode we covered. Yeah, Mike, you know, I love having guests. I love getting to talk to so many different people, but it's always fun when it's just the two of us because the insanity is just allowed to flow. It takes us in insane directions to weird places, but always enjoyable from my perspective.
Yeah, I hope, unlike the reward in this Butch Cassidy challenge, none of us were a wet blanket this week.
All dry blankets over here, baby.
Well, Liana, if people want to check out what else you have going on in the podcast sphere, what irons do you currently have in the fire that has had several torches thrown into it?
Yes. So I am podcasting about RuPaul's Drag Race. So All Stars season 5 just started. So Brent Wolgamott and Amon Adwin and I all recorded the first episode for that. So that should be out soon. And then apart from that, yeah, just chilling at the B&B, you know, enjoying a little bit of a break, I guess, for all the silliness that is this RHAP B&B rewind.
Oh, wicka-wicka-wicka-mite. Though I guess... we're going to have to get
Vegemite. Might.
Yeah, we're going to have to get rid of the Australian accent because next week, Liana, for the next episode of RHAP's Look Back into Survivor Episodes Past, for episode 3, we're going back to Marquesas. We are going to season 4, episode 3 next week, which I believe is called No Pain, No Gain. It is memorably known for two things. First, from a more survivalistic perspective, it is the episode where John Carroll got stung on the hand by a sea urchin and Kathy Vavrick O'Brien, being the badass person she is, just pees on it to get rid of the poison. But also from a strategic perspective, this is really where Boston Rob sort of starts coming alive as a survivor strategist. This is where he makes the big move against Hunter. And spoiler alert for our conversation next week, I know that Marquesas has talked about a lot about the significance of the Road to 4 and how that really shaped a lot of survivor strategy. I would say that Hunter Ellis's boot in Survivor Marquesas is another under-edited historical moment that I think bears a lot of fruit down the line. So super excited about that. Guess TBD, but Liana and I should be back talking about some season 4 next week.
That's right. And yeah, not the fruit that you can't get in the game, but better than a can of peaches, I think, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, and a tin of sardines to go with that. You can always follow me at a Mike Bloom type. As I mentioned before, I'm covering Top Chef, which is in its waning weeks. We had a perennial B&B guest, Rourke Luskin, on this week, and she was a lot of fun. Of course, I'm going down the hatch with Josh Regler every week, covering Lost, getting into some very fun episodes there, as well as we round the bend on season two. And also, this week, I was on a Robin Akiva Nita podcast. They did a double dose show, and I was the back half of the week. And it was a big old back half, thicket like thicket here, as we did a brand steal, a long time in the making, Survivor Stans versus Ops, where friends and enemies of Robin Akiva Nita podcast were pitted against each other in a Survivor simulator. It is nearly 4 hours, but we really enjoyed ourselves. And I hope those of you that want to check it out, enjoy yourselves as well. It was a lot of fun to partake in, a nice big helping 42 days worth, much like this Australian season.
That's right. Yeah. And we get to put a thing on the wheel. So who knows? Maybe our what I wrote it down. What was it called?
Well, of course, Buff Welk and Thicket with their enemy, Dolby Connaldson, the fedora wearing man.
Of course.
And what was their catchphrase?
I don't remember. Someone tweet at us and tell us.
Oh, yeah, it was yes, pecan.
Yes, pecan, baby. Oh, man, that's also, I think, Kathy's saying from Survivor Marquesas. Yes, I pecan.
Oh, I can't wait to get into the Kathy laugh next week. Kathy's so much fun. Oh, I'm so excited to get into it. So thank you all for listening. If you have suggestions about general things that we can do, as we have shown over the course of this podcast, we could get into anything and everything, not just about Survivor, but I guess about life and our various things that we're up to both in the past, present, and future. So feel free to tweet it to us, hashtag RHAPBNB or RHAPBNB at gmail.com. Again, sort of reemphasize what we said in the intro. Thank you to those of you that are listening. It is completely understandable given everything that is going on. If you want to, you know, take a break from all this lunacy and divulge in some very vital topics and conversations, or just even take a break in general from podcasting. But we are having a good time here, getting away for just an hour and a half to get into pure nonsense. And I'm excited to keep doing it for the near future. And I hope you'll be along for the ride with us as well. That being said, be sure to check out those links that we put in the description and the show notes. Be sure to go to joincampaignzero.com and send a screenshot of your donation to Rob Cesarino, who will match it. Thank you all so much for listening. We'll be back next week talking about Survivor Marquesas Episode 3, perhaps with a guest. We'll see. We're sort of riding down the river at this point like a crate of wet blankets. But for now, we'll check you out at your next stay.
Mike and Leona, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the RHAPBNB. Mike and Leona, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the RHAPBNB.